Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince Montague, your host. It's Tuesday, April the 21st. At least I dodged at 4:20 back when we used to broadcast on Monday night. So, but anyway, NASCAR in action at Thunder Valley, the long drawn out race Sunday. After a lengthy rain delay, I'm surprised they got it all in. NHRA off this week, IHRA at Norwalk, Ohio, IndyCar out the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach. Should have Richie Crampton, who won the Top Fuel Wally at Las Vegas, pulling in just a few, so we'll get to talk to him, and we'll be heading down to Houston this coming weekend. So we'll get his take on coming out of Vegas and heading down to Texas. But anyway, just doing Burning Rubber Radio with Andy DeLay, and you can check his show out on Performance Racing Network or motorsportsnetwork.com, and you should have that up. Go to his Facebook page as well as Burning Rubber Radio. Give it a like, and we're talking about motorsports safety and how tracks have become safer and all this, and what the biggest things that were probably the greatest thing since the passing of Dale Earnhardt in NASCAR. And I said it was the mandatory wearing of the Hans device, and then also the safer barriers. So you just look at if you watched the race on Sunday and you saw Landon Castle slam into the wall like he did, without the safer barriers or the Hans device, he could have been seriously injured because he hit the wall a ton, and it's not like the car disintegrated at some of these restrictor plate tracks and come apart and have a time to slow down. This thing was just a solid impact, and then he came. As a matter of fact, when the car came to rest down in the infield, it was kind of like he didn't have the window net down right away. But when you finally saw his hands moving through the windshield, it was a good thing. And then he finally got the net down and climbed out of the car. Of course, he wound up a little sore for a bit, but he was able to come out of the infield care center and talk to Jamie Little about it, so he was okay. Another big thing on the on the event that happened during the race is Denny Hamlin making the first 23 laps, and then Joe Gibbs happened to go call Eric Jones to come take over. And he had already left the track because he was scheduled to run on Saturday in the Xfinity Series. And he was pressed in for duty, had to fill in for the last rest of the race for your 475 laps, and he didn't do too bad either. I mean, that the kid is, they were saying that Joe Gibbs said he was on the fast track to the Sprint Cup Series, which does that mean it'll be next year because that's the final year Sprint has their contract, or will it be the next series? But I mean, we're still waiting to see who takes over for Sprint. I'm surprised. I guess they sold as many phones as they could. I mean, and they've been in they've been the primary sponsor since 2000. So you figure if you include Nextel, when Nextel took over for Winston, that was only a couple of years before Sprint bought out Nextel and just carried the same trophy and just changed it from Nextel to Sprint. But a brief instance there, and of course, I think it was 2 years. And that Nextel was over, because when I was trying to think now, as long as I've been going to these things, going to Dover, I can try to figure it out. Well, anyway, I hope our guest didn't forget. Right now, if we go to look at the NHRA point standings after last weekend at Vegas, Richie Crampton sits a solid fifth. He's only 36 points back, which that's two round wins ahead of the guys ahead of him. So it's not something hard to make up. When you consider the fact that right now Antron Brown is your points leader, and Tony Schumacher, who was last year's champ, 10 points behind. Sean Langdon, who's running third in the series, he's 15 back. So Spencer Massey's 27. So you figure 36 points out of a 24-race season, of course, top 10 get reseeded for the countdown. So, but the closer you are to the top, if you finish in first, then you get a little bit more of a point gap. Which is actually a 30-point advantage over second place. The drivers into after the first 18 races, the top 10 into the final segment of the playoffs, and then their points are reset within 10 of one another, with the exception of the points leader. 10-point gap between second, third through 10th, all the way down, and then a 30-point gap between the points leader and the second place person. That kind of didn't help Erica Enders last year when she missed two races going into the countdown and had to make that back up. Of course, she did, winning it on the very last race of the season, going all the way to win the coveted Wally and becoming the first woman pro stock champ. Well, she gets to reap the rewards of being the champ. She's throwing up a first pitch at a baseball game, but I don't know exactly where, but that's what I was told by her people. In the funny car division, it's Matt Hagen, who is the defending champ from last year. A 9-point lead over second place Del Worsham. Now, they had a battle throughout last year, and then Robert Height is in third. He's 46 back. So a little bit further of a gap between first and third here, and then in the top fuel. John Force, he's sixth in the points. Now, you got to figure, he's got a whole brand new team. He won his first event of the season at Las Vegas. And he's got a brand, they switched make of cars and everything. So that way you can, you got to do a little more in engineering and all that kind of stuff. As a matter of fact, if you look at that, the only Chevys in the field or John Force, Robert Height, and Courtney Force. And she was listed as a test last week, so I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Did she even run? I think or she was relegated to test after her run. In the pro stock, Erica, with her win, climbed back in the second place. And she's only 35 points out. Only one ahead of her is the person she beat last year for the title, Jason Lyne. So, good to see her climb that back. It didn't take long anyway for her to get there. So, what are you going to do? Anyway, in the Grand Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach in the Verizon IndyCar Series, Scotty Dixon, driver for Chip Ganassi, took home the trophy, beating out two Penske rivals, Elio Castroneves and Juan Pablo Montoya. Montoya faring pretty well since he's returned to the IndyCar series after a stint in NASCAR with Chip Ganassi. And he did return to drive in, I think, the Brickyard 400 last year and Michigan for Penske. So you never know. Roger's sneaking back in if he has a car and a sponsor to play a plaster on it. Simone Pagenaud was fourth. Tony Kanaan, home fifth. Sebastian Bourdais, sixth, seventh. Joseph Newgarden, eighth. Marco, the youngest one, the only Andretti running in the field now, Michael's son. And we have Carlos Munoz in ninth, and 10th is Sebastian Saavedra. Graham Ray Hall is 11th. He's engaged to Courtney Forst, or maybe they finally got married. I don't know yet. I haven't seen any postings on it. So, and no ladies in the field. No Simona Di Silvestro. So, I don't know. We're going to have the Xfinity race, which turned out to be a little ugly, if you really want to look at it. Joey Logano started on the pole, led every lap. He didn't lose anything coming in the pit. He just led every lap. So we'll get to that. Right after this word from our spots.
Cajun's Candle is a family-owned company that makes the finest quality hand-poured candles you'll find anywhere, in many different colors, sizes, and scents. They use only the best wax and scents to ensure your candle performs to its very best, each and every time. Cajun's uses a unique blend of hybrid wax that consists of a 50% soy and a 50% paraffin mixture, enabling the best of both worlds in candle making. The soy base is to ensure a cleaner burn while being environmentally friendly, and the paraffin is used to achieve a great scent throw and the ability to add color nicely, giving those bright, vibrant colors that catch your eyes. Cajun's Candles carries a wide variety of gel candles as well. Need a fundraiser for your school or church? Candles make a great item to use for fundraisers for any type of function you may have. Give Cajun's Candles a call at 610-960-5677 or find them on the web at www.cajunscandles.com. And for all you Facebook users, be sure to like them at Facebook at facebook.com/Cajun's Candle.
And we're back here on Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince Bonfigli, and we're looking at yesterday's Xfinity Series race, which Joey Logano spanked the field. And it's kind of strange to see that in the category says one lead change amongst one driver. In other words, nobody. Oh, wait a second. Joey Logano started second. Took the lead on the first lap. Eric Jones was on the pole, so he technically took the green flag in first place. And by the time they came around the complete lap one, Joey Logano was never caught. So what's that go to tell you about the strength of Penske Racing in the Xfinity Series? It's kind of weird that one car does that, and it doesn't happen too often, let alone in the Cup Series. I think Jeff Burton did it at Loudon, New Hampshire, when they decided to put a restrictor plate there after Kenny Irwin and Adam Petty were both killed there. I mean, in the same year, it was within one race and then the next race, and then they decided to put a restrictor plate on it, and I think Jeff Burton led every lap on that one. And it's not something you usually see in any racing event, let alone a NASCAR event, more something you would see in IndyCar or Formula One, where these guys get out there. We just don't expect things that where the events would go for 300 laps. 300 laps, fortunately, it's only 150 miles. 159.9, according to that. Average time of the race, an hour and 50 minutes and 0 seconds. Average speed, 87.2. Margin of victory, 1.1. 8 cautions for 48 laps. They're pretty much, I guess, fairly clean race if you want to look at it for Bristol. And you get those few cautions, and you can get away with that. But anyway, you know, what are you going to do? As far as the rest of the results, it's Daniel Suarez who came in second. Buescher was third. Eric Jones was fourth. So the pole sitter finished in the top five. He's driving the 20 car. Ty Dillon, fifth place. Chase Elliott, sixth. Seventh is Harvick. Eighth, Brian Scott. Ninth, Brendan Gaughan. And tenth is Elliott Sadler. Good run for Jeffrey Earnhardt. He wound up 15th. Darrell Wallace Jr. had success last year in the Truck Series with Kyle Busch Racing and switched over to Roush and isn't having the fortune that he's had before. So right now, as far as the points go, you have Chris Buescher leading in a tie with Chase Elliott with Ty Dillon, then Chase Elliott. Bubba Wallace is fourth. Ryan Reed, who won the first race at Daytona, he's fifth in points. Elliott Sadler stuck in the middle of the pack. It seems like his equipment isn't the same, or he's just not into it. Brendan Gaughan is seventh. Eighth, Regan Smith. Ninth, Ryan Scott. And tenth is Daniel Suarez. So that covers the results from the Xfinity race. And we have Joey Logano, and then Greg Irwin talking about his win there.
From our race winner, today's 33rd annual Drive to Stop Diabetes 300 NASCAR Xfinity Series race here at Bristol Motor Speedway. Our race winner leading wire to wire is Joey Logano. He drives the number 22 discount tire Ford for Team Penske. He's joined by crew chief Greg Irwin. Joey, congratulations. You set a Bristol Motor Speedway Xfinity record here today. No driver in the history of the series has ever led every lap at this racetrack. So congratulations on that.
That's
and
cool.
Another perfect driver rating for you of 150.0. I believe you have one at Phoenix this year as well. So congratulations on that. Those aren't easy to come by. Talk about your run out here today and how you thought you were able to really just blow the field away.
Well, Greg Irwin, I guess. It's not often you get a car that's good. In practice, I thought we were okay. Last night we were talking about it. I was like, what do you think? How do we stack up? I said, I think we're just okay. I don't think we're great. I felt like if everything went right, we'd have a shot at winning the race. But I did not think we were going to have a car like that. So overnight adjustments made it a lot better. And maybe I was just asking for the world. But apparently it worked out. So not very often you get a car that's that fast. And when you have a car like that, you just, the whole race, you're just hoping something doesn't go wrong. You're looking for the checkered flag because it's pretty neat to say you've led every single lap. That's actually a pretty neat little thing. I've never done that before in my career, and I don't think in, like, any kind of race car. So that's pretty cool to do today.
Greg Irwin, just talk about the car. You know, did you know when you started here yesterday that it was going to be this good?
No, we didn't. We, the hard part is what we have is a couple races with Ryan last year, and then in 2013, a couple races with Brad. So, again, knowing how Joey was going to adapt to the baseline that we have as the 22 program was sort of a question mark. But so far, between Phoenix and here and Atlanta, obviously we're doing the right things for him. So, I can't really – they build such nice equipment at Penske Racing, and our people in particular, our road crew and our shop crew, and I got to thank them because, the things have been rocket ships off the truck. And, Andrea there as the team engineer, she puts in just an amazing amount of effort into trying to keep records straight for all three of these drivers and keep me informed with the information I need to make, the decisions. And it was we were up pretty late last night trying to get this thing sorted out in the early morning. So it feels good for it to all kind of culminate in an effort like this. And this guy's unreal.
Questions now.
There you have Greg Irwin and Joey Logano talking about car and getting it to where they thought it would be competitive, but, nobody leads every lap too often. It's the stars have to be lined up in a row and all that. So it just goes to show you that they made the right changes on Friday night, and the weather was the right temperature and the track conditions were right, and just so many of those things that come into play. I think we will get to the IHRA. Came about. I was just looking for the True Jam Nationals, the Southern Nationals, that's two records in the Crower Pro Mod. Isaias Rojas, David, Dina Parisi, who wound up, who was a former guest, she had the problems, car broke. They run three rounds here. So Rojas went on to defeat Jimmy Keen. In the Nitro Funny Car, Tim Boychuk lost to Mike McIntyre, running a 5.66 to a 5.8. Now, that's a Nitro car in the IHRA versus a Nitro car in the NHRA, which is a second and a half quicker. A miles per hour or higher as well. As a matter of fact, they were running two hundred and sixty was the winning time, the winning speed, and the losing speed was 237. And then you look at NHRA's funny cars with 10,000 horsepower running 300 to 325, I think, is the highest I've seen. Then you got your top fuelers going bigger than that. So, it's amazing with two different sanctioning bodies having the in the way of speed. Now, when we talked to Dina Parisi, she had a 3,000 horsepower Cadillac, but was only turning speeds like pro stockers in the NHRA. Well, I'd like to bring to the show our very special guest. Welcome to the show. This is Vince. You're on with Vince.
Oh, hey, this is Richie. How's it going, Vince?
Oh, not too bad. Glad to have you. You pulled off the Wally win in Las Vegas. How's it feel to get that one out of the way?
That was awesome. That was definitely the boost that myself and my entire MLR team needed for the 2015 season. We've had a good race car so far, but until then we had not executed on race day, so it was just great to finally get back into the winner's circle.
That's pretty good. So now you get to head to Texas. What are you looking forward there? Going from the desert to in Houston, where I think the temperatures should be pretty close to equal at this time of year.
Yeah, you know, I think we definitely worked on our hot track setup. You know, Aaron Brooks did a fantastic job in Vegas with a fairly hot racetrack. Obviously, as you said, we were racing out there in the desert, and it's also kind of at altitude. So it's about 2,500 feet there in Las Vegas. So the air is a little thinner and a little different. So making the power is a little harder in Vegas. But usually there's a lot of humidity going into Houston. So hopefully, you know, it'll be a combination of being able to make a little bit of power, being back down at sea level, as well as the fact that Aaron's got such a good handle on the hot racetrack surface with his clutch management that I think we've got a good race car that can go rounds and try and get into the winner's circle again at Houston.
That seems to be a pretty good setup to have. And right now you're sitting fifth in the point standings. That's got to feel pretty good right now. You're only 36 back from the top spot. So another couple of good days, you could be sitting atop the driver standings.
Yeah, it's crazy how close the top five are. That's less than two rounds of eliminations separating number one through number five. So if you throw in some possible bonus points during qualifying for being, you know, low for a session or two and some luck on race day, I think Houston's, it's going to be pretty interesting how the points fall after that event, you know. So definitely being within striking distance of number one is such a great feeling. It's still kind of strange for me being such a new driver to the sport and, being a, you know, still somewhat of a rookie that I'm sitting here talking about being close, you know, that close to number one in the points and, with, you know, at the sixth race into the season. So it's pretty cool. I've got a, you know, fantastic team that obviously make it possible for me to be in the position I'm in. And, you know, I'm just extremely lucky to drive that good equipment so early in my young career.
Now, how long have you actually been in the top fuel division? I think pretty much this year, what, last year a bit, getting your feet wet.
Yeah, so 2014 was my first season driving. I was able to drive a top fuel car during the summer of 2013 just to get my license. So I had never actually competed in top fuel until 2014. So that was my first full season at competing. And obviously I was able to win the NHRA AAA Road to the Future Award, which is the Rookie of the Year Award for 2014. And here I am starting my sophomore season, basically. So it's kind of a dream come true for me after moving from Australia 10 years ago and being a crew member for the past 8 or 9 years to get the call up to be the driver. And so 2014 was just an amazing year for me, and 2015 is looking to be even better.
I was going to say... I detected an accent, and I was going to ask you where you were from, but being you've been here for 10 years working on the cars, you think it gives you a better insight as to what needs to be done that you can give the feedback to your current crew chief after a couple of passes?
Yeah, definitely being around top fuel dragsters specifically for so long, it really helped my comfort level once I got to finally be the driver. You know, it's kind of not a lot of things can prepare you to jump in the driver's seat of a 10,000 horsepower race car. And, you know, growing up, it's all I wanted to do, but I never knew if I could do it, if I had the talent, if my body could stand it. You know, there was a lot of issues that, you know, hey, I'm going to get this great opportunity, but, you know, hopefully it all works out well. And, obviously it did, but I think a lot of that is just, like you say, because I have been around the cars for so long, and specifically the team that I drive for is the team that I worked with for the past 7 years prior to that. So the team chemistry and the comfort was there, and I've seen a lot of other drivers come and go and watched them learn and talk to them about it, and I just tried to be a student of the sport as much as I could, and I've had some great mentoring from a lot of great drivers, and of course my team owner Morgan Lucas, who I he was my predecessor, who I replaced. He's been just a great shoulder to lean on and to ask questions, and that really has expedited my learning curve. But still got a lot more to learn and a lot more racing to do before I'm, you know, a cagey veteran, so to speak. But it's just definitely. Working on the race cars helped get that comfort level up as soon as I could.
Now, who makes what kind of motors do you use? Like, I know J John Force uses Ford. Some people use Toyotas. John Force switched to Chevy from Fords. Do you still use the basic old big block 513 cubic inch Hemi design with, I don't think they can make these things strong enough to keep from melting down, pumping out 10,000 horsepower, let alone get on the track at 325.
Yeah, well, so we use, actually our blocks and cylinder heads are built by Alan Johnson in Santa Maria, California. We actually do have a lot of support and input from Toyota. They really help us out on the technical side of things and any engineering stuff and the R&D. So from that point of view, we are a Toyota team. The engine is a 500 cubic inch motor, which is the limit for top fuel in NHRA currently. That's the biggest cubic inches you're allowed to run. It's based on loosely based on a Chrysler 426 Hemi. There's no water jackets and any of that stuff. And, of course, we've got that big supercharger on top that makes about 50 to 60 pounds of boost. And, we're able to pump, 80 to 90 gallons per minute of nitromethane through these motors and get them to hang up to what we put them through. So they're pretty impressive pieces of equipment. There's a lot to be said with all that technical support we get from Toyota and a lot of the experience that these crew chiefs in our industry have had over the years on figuring out how to make these race cars make so much power, but also to try and make them reliable. So they're a pretty amazing engine. The most powerful wheel-driven style of race car engine on the planet, and there's nothing quite like standing on the throttle of a 10,000 horsepower animal that doesn't want to go anywhere but straight. So they're pretty awesome pieces of equipment.
Because you figure you're getting down there in about 3.8 seconds on a good day, and some tracks you can get faster, but the average is about 3.8 seconds for one of them, and it seems like if you blink, you miss the time to pull your drag chutes out because you're already down the 1,000-foot mark.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things that I had to learn quickly. These race cars cover so much ground so quickly, you literally do blink and miss it, so your awareness of where you're at on the racetrack is very important. And these race cars also, they only carry basically the bare minimum amount of fuel in the tank. And if you drive the thing too far, which at a lot of racetracks we can, keeping in mind that we race currently to 1,000 foot, but a lot of the racetracks we go to are still marked out to a quarter mile. So if you mess up, which I did a couple times as a learner driver of last year, and drive the thing too far, you'll basically run the thing out of fuel, and you can get into a lean situation and hurt the motor and stuff. So there's definitely a lot to be said for, paying attention to where you're at on the track, not only to get the parachutes out, but to shut the race car off on time and try and, help preserve as much of the engine carnage as you can.
And usually, which is kind of hard to do, because I've seen the blowers come off the top, or it looks good on TV, but it's probably not a good feeling when you're in the car.
No, it looks spectacular, but it's two things. It's very expensive, and it's also kind of dangerous. You don't want to be blowing up motors, and there's that small chance that little pieces of debris or parts of the motor can go out and get in the line of fire of the rear tires. And that's definitely the last thing you want to do, is to run over some of your parts and blow out a rear tire, because there's a lot of catastrophic things can happen from that point onward if that happens. So, yeah, it's in your best interest to keep it all in one piece. And obviously that's the way the team like it as well.
And I could imagine when you guys thought of when was the last race in Vegas or the one before that with Larry Dixon's car decided to come apart and get airborne and all that. So it was it's a scary thing when you figure it happens so quick that you never want to think it's going to go through it, but at least you have safety devices in the car that where you feel, you know, where you can feel a lot safer. Now, does your car have the complete canopy on it, or are you still running the open cockpit?
So I still have an open cockpit, as, you know, 90% of the field still have that. The only cars that really have that are Schumacher cars at the moment. But, you know, back to Gainesville when Larry Dixon's car broke in half, I had actually just ran the pair of cars ahead of Larry. So I was climbing out of my race car at the turnoff at the bottom end of the track, and I heard Larry's crash and all of the commotion that goes with that. And, man, that's you know, something that as a race car driver you never want to have to endure. But, you know, it does happen so quickly that, you know, it appears that you don't have any time to react to something like that. You're just kind of along for the ride. But as far as the canopies goes, you know, they appear to be working well for the Schumacher teams. And Antron has actually endured a couple of crashes with that canopy in place, and it appears to have, you know, helped him a little bit. But there's still, you know, there's a lot of downsides to it that we see that, you know, we're not willing to make that change if we don't have to. Plus the weight gain that the race car would have, it'd be about a 30-pound heavier race car if we put that canopy on. So we're going to continue on as we are with the standard windshield and, you know, fingers crossed with good maintenance and attention to detail that we won't lose a race car like Larry did.
Well, at least you ran in the heat right in front of him, because I noticed the safety safari is really good, but you always wonder running behind them if did they get all the pieces of junk off the track.
Yeah, no, the NHRA safety safari do just a fantastic job. And, you know, it showed again when I raced in Charlotte a few weeks ago. Dave Connolly had a pretty big engine explosion right there on the starting line and dumped a little bit of oil and stuff. And, you know, that was the lane I was in. And I was like, man, I hope they clean it up good. And as always, they did. You know, it was perfect. It probably was even better than before the oil down. So I don't know how they clean up the stuff so quickly, but they just do an amazing job. And without them, our sport wouldn't be half as cool as it is.
I know. I mean, because you figure after every pass, they got to check the track down and make sure it's ready for the next run. And you being in Charlotte for the four wides, I noticed you were at it last year. This is your second go-around throughout the league. But what's your thought about four dragsters on the track all at once instead of just the two, other than the fact that it makes for the elimination rounds going by real quick?
Yeah, the eliminations do go quick. But, no, you know, it's a fantastic thing for the fans. You know, there's nowhere else in the world that you can currently see four 10,000 horsepower top fuel dragsters or nitro funny cars or pro stock cars or pro stock bikes run side by side like that. It's a pretty great show for the fans. And a lot of drivers don't like it. I enjoyed my time there this year. Last year I was a little overwhelmed in learning the staging procedure, which there's definitely a lot more going on when you have to pay attention to three other drivers as opposed to obviously just one driver. I came out of there, you know, feeling pretty good about everything this year. We were in the final round, which obviously makes you feel a little bit better about the race. But, you know, it's a pretty pretty spectacular thing that Bruton Smith put together there at ZMAX Dragway. And I don't know that I'd like to see all the races four wide, but, you know, definitely going there in the springtime and getting to compete in that four wide is pretty neat. And it's definitely something that I'd love to win one day, because who knows, four wide racing may not be around forever or whatnot. So I definitely would like to win that race just in case I don't get the opportunity to compete in it again in the future.
Yeah, there's something so you can beat three other guys at the same time. It was designed, I guess, like you said, as a fan thing, and I guess the NHRA said, sure, why not? We'll give it a try. And they seem to have had it for a few years now, so I can remember it wasn't too long ago they didn't have it, so you're right in the instance that they could shelf it at any time, but I don't know. I remember covering English Town one year and being behind the tree, behind the start finish line, when two of you guys run down a track at 20,000 horsepower and how that felt. So I could just imagine what it's like with four top fuelers or funny cars going down the track, and what's how that feels on your body as a spectator.
Oh yeah, I mean, even as a driver, you know, you can hear every car, you know, across all four lanes, and two race cars have a tendency to shake the ground and, you know, get your attention. But man, when all four race cars are running down there, it's a pretty impressive show. But I'm a purist. I do like the old only worrying about one particular driver that you're competing against. But anyways, we'll see how the future pans out for four wide racing. We could see some more of it at some other tracks for all I know.
We'll just have to wait and find out. Now, which one of now that you've been to every track on the circuit, what are some of the places that you like to run at the best as far as, you know, the feel of it to you, let alone how you've performed at it?
Well, you know, I think obviously I love racing at the historic racetracks that, you know, you talked of English Town. That was actually where I scored my first victory last year, was at English Town. And, you know, that's such a historic racetrack that, you know, legends have been racing at since the 60s. And you know, as a fan of the sport, just getting to compete it at English Town and Pomona, California, and of course the U.S. Nationals out here at Indianapolis, combined with all of the other historic venues that we get to compete at, it's kind of hard to pick a favorite. But you know, so probably my top two would be Pomona in California. That was the first NHRA racetrack I ever got to attend as a spectator when I flew over when I was 19 years old from Australia just to watch an NHRA drag race. It was the World Finals. I definitely have a soft spot for racing in Southern California there, but probably more to the point, racing here at my home now in Indianapolis is, you know, that probably means the most to me. That this is where I got my top fuel license. This is where I got to race at the U.S. Nationals last year, which was the 60th running of that event, and obviously I won that event, you know. So to win Indy in my rookie season last year at a place like Indianapolis, which is kind of hallowed ground for a drag racer, and it's in our own backyard here in Indy, definitely Indy is probably number one on my list.
Pretty good. I think to win in your rookie season, let alone at your home track and a Vaughan at Indy as well. I think when you say Indy, everybody, you know, anything in motorsports comes to mind, whether it's U.S. Nationals, the Indy 500 and the Brickyard 400. And you just think Indy, it's the place for motorsports as it is like the venue that everybody wants to win at, no matter which series you're in, and to be able to do that in your rookie season, they said, let alone even get a win in your rookie season, which isn't all that easy to begin with. Just goes to show how good of a team and driver a team you have and the driver you are to be able to work that magic to get down to to all four rounds.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, but you're exactly right. As a motorsports junkie that I am, living here in Indy is just, it's so cool. You know, motorsports capital of the world. And like you say, if you can win anything in Indy, you're doing something pretty cool, no matter what form of motorsport you're in. And obviously working for Lucas Oil here in Indy as well, you know, they sponsored the football stadium and the drag strip, and they're so heavily involved in motorsport. It, for me, this is such a great fit, and it's just been an awesome place for me to move to and live. Really enjoy it.
I guess you get to attend a lot of company stuff, whether it's the owner's box at the in the football games in the wintertime, as well as doing anything in the off weekends when you're home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have a lot of great opportunities to go to the Colts games and of course, the Indiana Pacers basketball and then, you know, and all of the motorsports events that Lucas are involved in, which, you know, as everyone knows, there's a huge amount of those. So, yeah, it's really a cool place for me and my family to be right now. And whether it's watching sprint car racing midweek or, you know, drag racing or the month of May with the Indy 500 coming up, there's always, you know, such exciting stuff going on. And it's a place for a race car enthusiast to really have a good time.
That's for sure. It's one of those places I have to get to that cross off my bucket list as a media member. So sometimes I like to go as a fan, just sit in the stands and enjoy it instead of having to worry about things. But anyway, I get there. Well, Richie, thank you for coming on with me here on Garage Talk Live, and hope you'll come back and join us again. Maybe as you get closer toward that championship, and as I will see you climb the points there, because I think you're going to be a force this year. Just looking at it, so I don't want to make any predictions, but you got my vote.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Vince. That means a lot, and absolutely look forward to talking to you again sometime soon. So take care, and hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Goodbye. There you have Richie Crampton, our most recent winner in the NHRA. And he's got a few wins under his belt, getting the feel of it. It's always good to have the drivers come on. Back to in the Cup Series, another weekend where it was Matt Kenseth who sat on the pole, led four times for 47 laps. Of course, the biggest leader of the day was Kevin Harvick, who led six times for 184 laps. But there was something along the lines of a rain delay that seemed like to take forever, because time of the race was 3 hours and 37 minutes and 54 seconds. That's not counting the two red flags for rain. Matter of fact, I had a competition caution lap. There was 11 cautions for 117 laps of the 500 lapper there, which actually went overtime, the 511 laps. So it was Matt Kenseth getting his first win in a couple of years, because he didn't get one last year and still made the chase. And now he finally chased and won the race. But Jimmy Johnson, I don't know what happened, but he started 28th, wound up spinning a few times, running into people like Jeb Burton, came back to finish second, nipping Jeff Gordon, who was second. So Jimmy Johnson, who's already in the chase because he's already won twice, came second. Jeff Gordon was third. Ricky Stenhouse came in fourth. Ryan Newman was fifth. Tony Stewart was sixth. Kyle Larson, seventh. Eighth, Justin Allgaier. Good run for him. Stayed out of trouble pretty much. Ninth, get this, even with a couple of incidents involved and coming back from being a couple laps down, Danica Patrick for her second top 10 finish of the year. So who knows? Maybe she's finally turning it around. We'll just have to wait and see. There were 21 lead changes among six drivers. And the race was the Food City 500 in support of Steve Burns. Came down with cancer a while ago. He beat it, and it came back. So it's so he's just back in that fight. So all the support that he can get, everybody was holding placards and banners and stuff like that. The win by Kenseth was his 32nd career victory in the Sprint Cup Series and fourth at Bristol. So one of those weird races that happened. As a matter of fact, when they red flagged it for the second one, that was just about at the end of the race. There's about 11 laps to go, and they should have just, I thought they should have just shut it down because people are going to wait there, come back for what, three laps, and then then head on out. Well, this week we go to a night race. We go to Richmond, and usually I have Amy Turner on, but Richie Crampton, I guess they gave him the wrong time. It was he did make it in. I think I thought he was going to be on at 12. Here he was in at 12:30, so that's not a problem. So, probably he was supposed to call at 12:30, was what his peeps are telling me. I told him, oh well. Anyway, going to Richmond, I picked Kevin Harvick on some other program, but I'll stick with that. So, anyway, that's all we have for today. Hope you enjoyed the show. And a special thanks to Richie Crampton calling in. And we'll see you all next week. I'm Vince Bonfigli. Thanks again. Good night and good racing.